Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I am very happy to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Fahad Deshmukh, who is a founding member of Bahrain Watch and a freelance journalist based in Karachi, Pakistan, where he is speaking to us by telephone. Fahad grew up in Bahrain and was among the first generation of bloggers in the country writing under the pseudonym of Chanad Bahraini. Fahad Deshmukh, welcome to Talk Nation Radio. You and Bahrain Watch recently put out a statement about new PR contracts and what Western public relations firms have been doing for the government of Bahrain, and I want to talk about that. But first, for the benefit of people in the United States who may not know, just very briefly, where is Bahrain and what kind of a country is it?
David, Bahrain is it's a tiny island which is in the middle of the, it's not in the middle, but it's in the Persian Gulf, and it's right near to Saudi Arabia. It's the smallest of the Gulf countries, of the six GCC countries. And if what you're alluding to is sort of what the political situation over there is, you know, we've got essentially a monarchy, which is there. And the monarchy likes to describe itself as a constitutional monarchy, but you sort of have to fudge things to describe it as that. It's more or less a monarchy. A king rules the country. A prime minister who is the uncle of the king, he is the one who has executive power. The royal family, the Al Khalifa family, has been running the country since the 1700s.
And what is the U.S. government's relationship to this monarchy? We hear a lot about spreading democracy from our government in Washington. What's its relationship to the government of Bahrain?
Yeah, the United States, what gets quoted the most is the United States' most important asset in Bahrain is the Fifth Fleet. The U.S. Fifth Fleet is based in Bahrain, and it has been for several decades. And that is because of the U.S.'s interests in the Persian Gulf and controlling the flow of traffic in the Persian Gulf. And so that really seems to dominate Bahrain's relationship with the U.S. And the other factor is the U.S.'s relationship with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has a lot of oil, the U.S. has interest in that. And because Saudi Arabia has its interest in Bahrain, through that relationship, the U.S. also has a lot of interest in Bahrain and also the monarchy and royal family in Bahrain.
I think it's about 19 years that the Fifth Fleet has been there. Is that right?
I'm not. I'll have to let me think. But it's the base that they took over, that the Fifth Fleet is now in. That was a UK. It was a British Navy base. And when the British left in 1970s, then that was then rented out to the United States. Probably more than. The Fifth Fleet is probably been there for about 19 years, but the U.S. base has been there for longer.
In brief, what has been happening for the past 3 years and more in Bahrain?
Yeah, Bahrain's been in the middle of a political crisis for the past 3 years since February of 2011. The history of that, or the background of that, goes further back. But essentially, in Bahrain, there's been a political movement from between the people of Bahrain and the monarchy and the royal family, and essentially, like everyone else in the world, the people of Bahrain would like to have democracy, would like to have representative government, and there's been an ongoing movement to get more democratic rights for several decades. But in 2011, after being encouraged by what was going on in the rest of the Arab world, the Arab Spring in Egypt and Tunisia, people decided in Bahrain that this would be a good time to rejuvenate their efforts and organize again. And they went and protested en masse in Bahrain for some more basic democratic rights and reforms. And they were met with force and violence, with basically a security crackdown against the protesters. And that crisis has been continuing until now, in which the government doesn't want to budge, it doesn't want to grant any of those basic democratic and civil rights to the people. It's met all of the protests with with violence, some piecemeal reforms here and there, and as we've documented in our latest press release, a lot of PR, a lot of trying to preserve its image using PR rather than trying to change what's actually happening on the ground.
What have these Western public relations firms been doing for the government of Bahrain, and what do you expect the new ones getting contracts now to be doing?
Essentially, what's going on is, or what seems to be the case, is these PR companies are, you know, whitewashing the government's image in the international media. Let's be clear, all of the, you know, pretty much all governments around the world, all companies hire PR firms and, you know, to present a rosy picture of what they're doing. But we're particularly concerned about Bahrain and the timing of it, of how they've been hiring a lot more firms since 2011 to try and cover up the human rights abuses which have been going on. We're talking about cases of torture, of extrajudicial killings, and, you know, what is the actual political system in Bahrain. So we've got all of these Western, you know, primarily based in London and Washington, PR firms, lobby firms, who are trying to put out this nice and softer image of Bahrain, an image which is about being tourist-friendly, about being business-friendly Bahrain, and trying to use that to cover up the human rights and political issues which people who want to do business and who may well be interested in visiting for tourism might not be so comfortable with. So that's our speculation about why the government is hiring so many PR firms and what they'll be doing. And that seems to be the case in terms of the kind of output we've seen from these PR firms as well. So that's why we're so troubled about it. As we say, you know, everyone, you know, all sorts of companies and governments use PR, but we're disturbed by the nature of what they're trying to cover up and the extent, the amount of money which is going into PR rather than what should be going into genuine reform efforts. That, we think, would be a much better use of the money for both PR and for, you know, if the government wants to, you know, keep its tourism in business. We think that would be a much better use of its money than spending it on trying to just change its image.
Indeed. It seems that this new $20 million contract going to, I guess, two companies, Bell Pottinger and Consulum. I looked up the first one, Bell Pottinger, based in London, and looked at some of their clients, and they include Augusto Pinochet in Chile. They include the president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh. And this firm seems to have a reputation for covering up violence and abuses. Isn't it bad PR just to go and hire one of these firms?
Yeah, that's what we would have thought. But it seems, you know, that for the government, they need some, you know, when they don't have the sort of reality behind them, they need to get whatever they can to sort of create that new reality. And if that means throwing money at PR, then, you know, that's what they'll do. To address your question about whether this is bad for the government to associate themselves with a PR company, which is has several other dictatorships as their clients who regularly abuse the rights of their citizens. You're right. I think that should be an issue. But from what we've seen, in part, maybe it seems as though it is successful to some degree, unfortunately, that for a lot of people who are looking at Bahrain, they might not necessarily associate Bell Pottinger, or they might not know that Bell Pottinger is working for Bahrain. And so in that respect, it seems that, you know, if you throw enough money out there and if you can just, you know, repeat the message over and over again, then that may well cover up what's actually going on. So yes and no. I think to the average person who, you know, who spends a bit of time to find out what's going on, then yes, you know, being associated with Bell Pottinger may not be such a good thing. But for many people who don't have the time to do that, then they may well just they may well just buy the image which is being put out and the narrative which is being put out by the government and its PR firms.
We are speaking with Fahad Deshmukh from Bahrain Watch. it seems to me when I try to find out the facts about what's happening in Bahrain, I get emails from good organizations and I look at good websites. But if I look in the major corporate media in the United States, I can find everything. If I look in the back pages, if I look at little articles on page 25 of the newspaper, if I look at the big mainstream human rights organizations, I can find all the information about the imprisonments and the torture and the abuses, but I have to go and look for it. There's no front page screaming headlines. There's no yelling. There's no outrage. There's no demand for missiles or sanctions. There's not a big issue that anybody's hearing about. Is that because of the Fifth Fleet and the desire to please Saudi Arabia, or is it because of the work of these PR firms who, I would think, don't want those stories to be mentioned at all? Are they keeping them on the back pages?
I think it's probably a combination of all of these things, and also to do with the way the media works as well in terms of its media cycle. So, yes, you're right. On the one hand, the Western governments sort of aren't that interested in pushing a narrative in which there are calls for military intervention in Bahrain or sanctions or these kinds of things. Secondly, you're right, there's the PR of the government, in which the PR firms are pushing an entirely different narrative about what's going on, which are devoid of the actual facts. And the third thing, as I mentioned, is also the media cycle. When the movement, or when these protests first erupted, or not first erupted, but the rejuvenated protests erupted in 2011, in February 2011, then there was coverage of what was going on. There were a lot of foreign correspondents who visited Bahrain. And then slowly people moved on elsewhere. The journalists went to other countries, and recently it's been Ukraine. All of these things form the basis of the reason why there is so little coverage of Bahrain. But yes, certainly, I think the interest that the Western governments have in the regime and the government in Bahrain does to some extent dictate the kind of coverage that the Western media has.
What would the news look like here in the United States and elsewhere if it were up to you and up to Bahrain Watch? What would be the focus for people here who fund the Fifth Fleet, who fund the arming of Saudi Arabia? What would we be learning about the events of the past 3 years in Bahrain if it were up to you?
I think what you hit the hammer right on the nail, that for the people in the United States who are funding this, I think in the last year, the U.S. foreign funding to Bahrain was something like $11 million. That was that was just in what's called peace and security aid. So something like $11 million, and plus all sorts of other trade deals, which is coming out of the U.S. taxpayers' pocket. They should know what's going on and what that's being spent on. And in Bahrain, we know that the kind of what we'd want the people in the U.S. to know is the kind of human rights abuses which are going on in Bahrain. As I mentioned, the kind of regular arrest of people for protesting, people who are being arrested for tweeting, people who are being arrested for blogging, for crimes like insulting the king. On the one hand, the government and all of its PR firms like to say that there are no political prisoners and that no one is arrested for holding an opinion. That they'll say that all of the people who are arrested are arrested for things like terrorism and other crimes. Whereas regularly, and this is something that we've been documenting, people who are being arrested and charged for tweeting an insult of the king. On the other hand, we also want people to know about the kind of political system that exists in Bahrain. As I mentioned, the government, and again, the PR firms, like to portray this image that Bahrain is a constitutional monarchy, that there is a parliament which is elected by the people, and the king just plays the role of a head of state in the way that the queen does in the United Kingdom or in other constitutional monarchies. But that's far from the reality. One, you have a bicameral system in which half of the seats in parliament, the upper house of parliament, is appointed directly by the king, and the other half of the seats you have are elected by the people. So just right there, you've got, you know, half of the parliament is appointed by the king. And then in the elected part, in the lower house, those people who are elected, that system is from a heavily gerrymandered system in which the districts, which are dominated by the opposition supporters, there are far more voters there than there are in those districts which are dominated by pro-government elements, by pro-government supporters. So it's heavily gerrymandered against people who are in support of the opposition. And so, and obviously, so that renders this claim of it being a constitutional monarchy, it renders it baseless. So that's, those are the kinds of things that we think should be more common knowledge for the taxpayers in the US who are funding the support of the government in Bahrain. The other thing that I should mention as well is that the US government is what, or rather what the people, or what a lot of people in Bahrain do not want, is military intervention in Bahrain that we've seen elsewhere. I think what people rather want is just to have a fair playing field where people can challenge their government without knowing that the government isn't backed by arms which are paid for by foreign, by Western regimes. They'd like to have a fair playing field in which they can challenge the government, in which they can question the government, and not have to fear about being locked up. So rather than say that, you know, the people want the U.S. to intervene in Bahrain, I think rather they'd want the U.S. to just, you know, stop intervening in Bahrain, because already that intervention, by virtue of the U.S. Fifth Fleet, by virtue of all of the foreign aid which comes to Bahrain, means that there isn't a level playing field between the people and the ruling family.
It's very sad, but it's a very important point that you have to make, that if the United States should become aware of the horrors happening in Bahrain, the immediate solution that comes to the mind of the U.S. government is to drop some bombs, and that will fix things. And so it's very important that that it be clear that the people of Bahrain, of course, do not want to be bombed. They would prefer the United States to stop doing what it is doing. There is a U.S. police officer, police chief John Timoney, who was known for brutality here and was sent over to advise the government of Bahrain on presumably how to beat people up. And we didn't hear much about that story in the United States. But I've spoken with activists from Bahrain and lawyers from Bahrain, people who have been imprisoned and lawyers who risk imprisonment for representing them in court, and we don't hear about these injustices. I think there have been a few small stories about the fact that you can get 7 years in prison for insulting the king. And that I guess at least one blogger has been sentenced to that. But you have been a blogger on Bahrain. Do you? But you're in Pakistan. Do you insult the king? Do you tweet or email insults of the king of Bahrain?
No, I don't tweet insults to the king of Bahrain. I could do if I want to do, because I'm no longer in Bahrain. However, you know, we think that people should have the right to do so if they feel they want to. People should have the right to insult the king. They should have the right to insult the leader of the opposition. They should have the right to insult anyone else if they want to. If there's, you know, if people are maligning people, if there's some issue in which people are tweeting things which are incorrect, then, you know, sure, we can have they can be challenged in some kind of a libel court. That's how we'd like it to see. But it shouldn't be a crime. No one should be locked up for saying things. And often government supporters will bring up the argument and say, look, you know, there have been cases in the UK and the US in which tweeting or, you know, saying things have led to people being locked up. And yes, there are cases like that around the world, but those shouldn't be the benchmark with which we set laws elsewhere. I think no one should be locked up for holding an opinion. No one should be locked up for saying things. Only in those extreme cases where saying something is directly related to violence, and you can, you know, draw that connection and say that saying something, tweeting something, was the directly linked to some kind of violence, then maybe you can make an argument for that. But generally, you know, insulting the king, insulting the prime minister, I mean, these are just things that people should, you know, grow a thicker skin for. It's part of democracy to be able to insult people, even if it's not right, even if it's unjust. Saying things shouldn't land you in jail. At the most, it should land you in a libel court, but nothing more than that.
When we hear about the Fifth Fleet of the U.S. Navy, when we do hear about it at all, we hear about it as if it is providing a service and protecting the countries of the Middle East and being responsible for them. So I'm curious what the general opinion of people in Bahrain is. Do they appreciate the Fifth Fleet, or would they rather it sail away and not come back?
I think people generally are, they don't sort of have particular hostility towards the U.S. Fifth Fleet, and neither do they particularly love it. The Fifth Fleet sort of does its own thing, other than seeing GIs every so often, you know, in the streets in the city. The U.S. Fifth Fleet doesn't directly, we don't see it interfering. People recently, though, I think, in terms of the kind of, you know, support that the U.S. does have for the government, people occasionally are, you know, will raise slogans against the Fifth Fleet and question its legitimacy, to be there. But on the whole, it hasn't become a major issue, and that's partly also because I think that people still sort of look to the U.S. For support, both in the opposition as well. You know, the U.S. historically being, it being, or at least claiming to be, a supporter of democracy, and also so many democratic, or rather civil rights movements, which have come from the U.S. people, still see maybe the U.S. people still hold these principles dear. So I think that's why people still feel as though, you know, having the U.S. around to be able to turn to the U.S. for support might be beneficial to some degree. I don't know if that's true, but I think some people certainly do sort of see that as being both problematic for opposition supporters and being some kind of a support. So I think that's sort of the relationship. There isn't, I wouldn't say there's a lot of hostility. There are factions, there are groups who are very much opposed to the U.S., for some Islamist groups, but I don't think they constitute the mainstream.
Does the U.S. government's behavior ever look hypocritical to people in Bahrain? Whenever there's a human rights abuse in Iran, we hear all about it, and Congress is outraged, and the president is outraged. When the president of Russia so much as makes a rude remark about gay people, we hear all about it. But when the king of Bahrain's government murders and tortures and abuses and imprisons, there's virtual silence. Is there ever a sense that there's hypocrisy?
Yeah, I think on that note, definitely. I think people certainly see the kind of threats that the U.S. gives to other governments and to other, you know, countries around the world, and the difference with its relationship to Bahrain. And people recognize that the reason for that hypocrisy is to do with security and to do with oil. And as people have said before as well, having oil in the region, or having hydrocarbons in Bahrain, has been a curse in some ways, because it means that other governments aren't willing to stand up, aren't willing to say things in support of democracy in Bahrain that they will do in other countries. So you're absolutely right that people do recognize this hypocrisy from both the U.S. and the United Kingdom, the two traditional supporters of the Bahraini government.
Most people in the United States don't know about Bahrain, don't know that any human rights abuses are happening there, don't know that our government supports that government. So when the White House wants to send missiles into Syria, and it's a big question on television, we're able to say no. But how do we create a topic and a question about a place nobody's heard of and get the right answer and get the United States to shift its policy? How do we do this?
That's right. I think you're right. This is an issue. And that's something that we've been trying to address, specifically what Bahrain Watch has been trying to do, is to try and question the narrative which is being presented by the Bahraini government and its supporters, and not by not by doing PR, not by just sort of repeating a message over and over, but by to try and present facts. If you go through the projects that we've been working on in Bahrain Watch, and you can check them out on our website, bahrainwatch.org. All of the projects are based on evidence which is publicly available. So for all of the PR work that we've done, this is all based on information which comes from the government's own tender board website. And it also comes from the United States has some great transparency laws which require people dealing, which requires PR firms in the US working with foreign governments to declare how much work they're doing and what they're doing. So, you know, we get information from there, and from the United Kingdom doesn't have their information isn't that well documented, but we get some information from there, and you know, we're able to put together a picture of what's going on using information which is out there on the internet. It's always been out there, and you can just compile it and show that what the Bahraini government is saying is different from the facts. The same goes for things like the kind of weapons which are being used in Bahrain. We just take pictures, or we have friends in Bahrain who have been taking photos of tear gas canisters, of rubber bullet shells, of the kind of vehicles which are being used by the Bahraini security forces. And, you know, we can show that we know that there is Korean tear gas being used in Bahrain, that there is rubber bullets from, say, Cyprus, which are being used in Bahrain. And there used to be tear gas shells from the US until, I think it was around 2011. I think maybe the US stopped sending tear gas or something. But there's a company, Non-Lethal Technologies, and a couple others, which from before 2011, I remember when I was there from around 2006, you know, you could see it. All of those tear gas canisters were coming from the United States. Yeah, the kind of work that we're doing is to just trying to debunk the most obvious narratives with publicly available information. And I think that's sort of the first step. It doesn't take a huge amount of work. Our organization isn't funded from anyone at all. We're all working out of our pockets, and we're based in different parts of the world. And, you know, we just take the time out that we can to work on these reports together. And I think, yeah, I think we have friends around the world who can help out in the same way by just, you know, putting this information together and helping to present a more evidence-based narrative of what's going on. And just to try and give you an example of the kind of international cooperation and the kind of results it's led to, we were, a few months ago, an anonymous source leaked to us a document showing that the Bahraini government wanted to buy a huge amount of tear gas from South Korea. When we got a hold of that document and we looked at it and we tried to, you know, verify it as best as we could, we started a campaign to try and urge people to somehow tell the Korean government, to put pressure on the Korean government to stop, to not let this contract go through, and to block the South Korean tear gas shipment. We didn't know what would happen, but, you know, we decided we'd, take a shot at it anyway. And we had friends in South Korea who decided to jump onto the campaign, and they campaigned in Korea against their government. And in the end, the Korean government said that, they would not be sending that shipment out to Bahrain. So that was, you know, a huge victory for us. And we think that there are other ways in which solidarity groups around the world can cooperate on different campaigns for the sake of, people around the world.
We have been speaking with Fahad Desmouk. He is a founding member of Bahrain Watch. The website is bahrainwatch.org. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.